This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. When the North Carolina Comedy Arts Festival began in the early 2000s, it was a pretty humble event featuring a handful of college improv groups, performers, and teachers. But 16 years later, it is now considered one of the premier comedy festivals in the country. This year's festival spans 2 weeks and features big names from New York, Chicago, L.A., and many cities in between. In addition to headliners on stage, the festival also provides a space for networking between comedy novices and veterans. We're going to talk today with performers at both ends of that spectrum. Joining me first is Ali Farinakian. He's performed improv for more than two decades. He wrote for SNL during its 25th anniversary season, and the founder of the legendary New York City comedy theater, The Pit. He's going to perform and teach at workshops this weekend, but joins me for a preview now. Ali Farinakian, welcome to The State of Things. Good to talk with you.
Thank you. You too, Frank. Thanks for having me.
And it's kind of welcome home. You spent your childhood and teen years growing up in North Carolina, right?
That's right. I moved to North Carolina when I was a third grader to Danbury, North Carolina. And then outside of Winston-Salem as a sixth grader, that's where my parents are still from. And then I went to Chapel Hill myself. So I guess you can go home again.
Yeah. Well, born in Iran and then came here to a relatively small town in North Carolina.
I was born in Iran, in Isfahan, Iran, in the fall of 68. We came here in the summer of 69.
Wow. So for you, do you think that any part of growing up in North Carolina had a part in your becoming a comedian?
Absolutely. I mean, I grew up in a small town. Danbury had a population of about 150. So all the kids had motorcycles by the time I got there as a seven-year-old. So I got one, like, shortly thereafter. So we spent a lot of time, you know, riding motorcycles, shooting bows and arrows, and chasing Sasquatch. There was a rumor that he lived in town. It was like a pungent odor somewhere around town. So there was a lot of playing make-believe, and I remember once we were playing make-believe with guns in the woods. There was a lot of Civil War reenactment going on.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Still
but
is.
Later, yeah. It still is. But later on, I was doing a TV show called Delocated that my friend John Glazer, it was his show, and I was running around in the woods with a fake gun, and it was like mirroring what I was doing as a kid.
It was
incredible.
Your professional start at Second City in Chicago. Tell us a bit about your move there and those early days and actually your decision to make this your profession.
Well, I was about to graduate from Chapel Hill. It was Christmas Eve of 89, and I was home. And all of a sudden, I was watching the show, Saturday Night Live, and I had an epiphany. I want to write for the show at some point in my life. And then I went upstairs, and I started writing down notes and ideas. And what I was actually doing was writing a running order of the show. And then I went back to Chapel Hill after Christmas break. I told a friend about it, and he said, well, you should look into this place called the Second City in Chicago. I said, well, I knew SCTV, but I didn't know what Second City was. So I used the Google of the time, 411, and I called Chicago Second City and found out they had writing classes taught by a former SNL writer, Michael McCarthy. And so I signed up and flew there November 1st, 90 to start studying sketch writing at Second City with a bag of clothes and a Mac SE.
Wow. Well, so how... I'm guessing a lot of people signed up for that class over time. How do you go from taking a class like that to actually getting a gig on SNL?
Well, I mean, after I got to Chicago, I started taking that class, and then I found out a place called the Improv Olympic, and there was a man named Del Close who was teaching there, and Sharna Halpern and him were partners. So then I started studying improvisation. I found that I fell into this thing of playing make-believe on stage. It was something that we kind of naturally did growing up in North Carolina. And so I was on a house team at Improv Olympic. Then I got hired by Second City in the mid-90s. Then I got fired by Second City. Then I got hired by Second City again. Then I got fired by them. And then August of 99, I got a job at SNL during the 25th anniversary season. I mean, it took 9 years, a lot of stage time, being around the right people, the right mentors. It was like a golden age of improv and comedy in Chicago in the 90s.
You lead an SNL writing workshop or several workshops to this day, and I guess you're going to be leading one this weekend, right?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy doing it. I mean, I love looking at sketches and helping people out with their sketches. And, you know, at this point, I probably read over 10,000 sketches. It's something I enjoy doing. It doesn't seem like work, and I'm happy to help demystify what a sketch looks like, what goes into a packet, and, you know, anything I can do to help people to, you know, pull out the promise within them and kind of just help them to find out, is it something you really want to do or is it something that you like the idea of? But, you know, yeah, I teach workshops around the country and at the Pit in New York.
Well, take us behind the curtain a little bit. I mean, how would you distinguish the sort of comedy or the way of approaching a sketch versus, say, a sitcom or stand-up? Are they fundamentally different?
Well, I think, you know, with sketch comedy, you know, because of the word sketch, it's very short, it's broad, and you don't have that much time. You've got to kind of get to the premise, and the premise is everything. The premise is, you know, kind of king. It all starts with the piece of wood you start with to making, like, furniture. If you don't have a good piece of wood, you're not going to make a great piece of furniture. So you've got to really cultivate your premises and wordsmith your premise down to what is this idea. And then from that, you're really trying to prove a case. I believe this is funny, and I'm going to show you evidence that it's funny using this, this, and this, usually three examples. And, you know, something can be an idea can be used for a sketch. It could be used for something in a sitcom. But then it might be less, you know, joke heavy. It might be like a little bit drawn out.
Yeah, it seems to me the real art of the sketch, if you spend any time watching the good ones and the not so good ones, you begin to make this distinction that often the premise is the joke. You know, guy comes from Mars and he's a Martian and he sees a beautiful woman and they want to make love. Oh, wow. So the premise is so wacky that it's almost hard to know where to go with that. And it seems to me that the art is figuring out how to take the wacky premise and not stop there, but actually develop it. And again, you don't have a lot of time. Am I right? I mean, is that part of the art of what you do?
Yeah, I mean, like just the premise you just had. Guy comes from Mars, wants to make love to a woman, but then you have to write down what are all the options. Do they match in some way? Do they have regular human issues? And you just start kind of brainstorming of like what are all the possible options that could be between these two people, and trying to figure out what is the funniest for the writer. I mean, ultimately, it's dealer's choice. It's what's funny to you. And then eventually you have to hammer out a draft. You have to take your idea. You've spent some time thinking about it. Hopefully you spent 80% of your time sharpening your axe and 20% cutting. And then you sit down and you have to begin to write a first draft. And from there, you begin to work on that draft.
I can bet you $1,000 that in that premise, Martian anatomy has everything to do with the joke. But I'm not going to pursue that with you. Actually, I want to talk about The Pit. You mentioned that. You founded that in New York City. Tell us about what led to founding. Well, maybe you should tell us, for those of us who haven't been there, kind of what The Pit is and what made you decide to do it.
Well, I mean, I was in New York City, and I was a founding member of a place called UCB, and it was a post-9/11 world in New York City, and I'd written for SNL, and I had, you know, worked at Second City and Improv Olympic, and there was a sense of what am I going to do with my life now? You know, there was a real sense in New York City of what now. So I decided that, you know, maybe I could take my credits and my experience and my, you know, 12 years of apprenticing and open something up. And I was working with a friend of mine, or hanging out with a friend of mine at the time named Chris Mumford, and we were talking about the idea of having a theater. And I wanted improv in there, and I wanted theater in there. And there's a place in Chapel Hill called The Pit. It's in the center of campus, and they say on any given day, everyone walks through The Pit. So that's kind of where the People's Improv Theater came from, the acronym kind of The Pit at Chapel Hill. And then we just began, you know, we found a space that was a little 2,000 square foot space, and we began teaching classes and doing shows there. It's been 14 years, and now we oversee three different spaces, and we have a 10,000 square foot rehearsal space called Simple Studios, and we teach anywhere at any given time. There's about 1,000 students, 40-plus instructors, and kind of just grew organically over the past 14 years.
The guiding philosophy of your theater is improv your life, improve without the E, improv your life. Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, the idea is, you know, you can use improvisation as a tool to write sketch comedy, to do stand-up, to make movies and television, but also you can use the tenets of improvisation to improve your life. You know, when you're at a crossroads, you know, sometimes we say no and that becomes our default mode, and we have to ask ourselves, why am I actually saying no? Is it out of fear or prudence? So one of the tenets of improvisation is yes and, saying yes to an idea and adding to it until you have to say no, thank you. So for me, improv has helped me since I found the tenets of improvisation, which, you know, Del Close cultivated and coined the phrase yes and, of when I'm like at a crossroads, how I make decisions and how I decide what I'm going to do and not do.
Talking today to Ali Farinakian, who is an improv comedian, founder of The Pit, and former writer for SNL, and going to be part of the North Carolina Comedy Festival this weekend. And joining me now are some of the novice comedians, in fact, the most novice comedians participating in this year's festival, part of Get the Hook. It's a high school improv team from Parkway Playhouse in Burnsville in the mountains, and they join me from partner station WCQS in Asheville. Levi Bradford is a senior at Mountain Heritage High School. Hello, Levi.
Hi.
Hannah Stella is a freshman at that very same Mountain Heritage High School. Hello, Hannah.
Hello.
And Kristen Livingood is the group's director. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, how's it going? Thanks for having us.
It's good. And Ali, if you'll hang on, I want to talk with these kids and get your take on some of this. But first, Kristen, tell us a bit about Parkway Playhouse. How did Get the Hook get started?
Sure. It's actually, it came together unplanned, completely unplanned. Every year we have an education branch of Parkway Playhouse called Parkway Playhouse Junior. And every year we have our fall show that we'll take to the Junior Theater Festival in Atlanta, Georgia. And this year we had a musical theater intensive summer camp. And what happened was what they do in that class is they learn a medley. They do an hour of music, an hour of drama, an hour of dance. And then at the end, they perform a medley at the, at a crafts fair in the square of Burnsville downtown. And for some reason they had pushed it back a weekend. So we didn't have a performance. And so instead of just doing the medley, I started teaching some improv, games to all of the kids, something that I normally do anyway, but we added games into the performance, and we played for about 50 minutes. And all of a sudden, the parents were like, "What is this? Why have we never seen this before? Would you do this? I would pay for this." And so, I of course, I'm just like, "Huh? You would pay for this, huh?"
Why didn't I think of this?
I know. Why didn't I think of this? So, what we ended up doing is I took just some of the kids that were actually the high school apprentices for the summer season, and what that just means is they help with the productions of the shows. They help backstage, run crew, soundboard, light board, things like that. And I just grabbed some of the high school interns that I knew were going to be hanging around, and I said, "Hey, why don't we just do another one of these shows, and all of the proceeds will go towards the trip to the Junior Theater Festival in January."
Let's put on a show, huh?
Yeah, we put on a show.
Well, let me check with Levi to see what it's like to be part of this. Levi, you heard Ali talk about the fact that these techniques, even if you don't become a comedian, can really improve your life. There's a way in which you can apply these. And I wonder, for you, how working with improv at this tender high school age of yours, have you thought about it, and has it had an impact on the way you do other things?
Definitely. I do believe in using improv every day of my life because, for one, it helps you make friends by making really good jokes. It helps a lot with that.
See?
Who would have knew? But I do believe, and what he was saying about, like, why do I say no to certain things and everything, I really agree with that. It helps me to be more open to other ideas, other anything, really, and I've really enjoyed it. It's my favorite time of the week is when we practice for 2 hours.
Hannah, what about for you? I know, spontaneity is certainly key to improv, but you've been doing this for a while. You've been acting and doing comedy work for a while. How has it changed for you to do this kind of formally, to think about improv as a thing?
I guess it's just kind of like this whole idea of the whole spontaneity is just having it as something that I can do and that I can experience, like, and people do this for a living, and it's just pretty incredible to, like, think about that and how, I don't know, this thing that I'm doing is just so opening for so many other options that it's just really amazing.
We're getting a preview
experience of
the North Carolina Comedy Festival today on The State of Things. Talking with Ali Farnakian, who is a seasoned comedian, and we're talking to some novices as well on The State of Things. Well, Hannah, I know things have changed for you. I mean, you were talking at one point about the fact that there's a difference between imitating somebody and embodying somebody, and that's something you've learned through acting and by studying acting. Am I right about that?
Definitely, because when you're imitating somebody, you're not being them. So whenever you're embodying somebody, you're feeling the emotions that they would be feeling. You're doing the things that they would be doing without being influenced by your own personality, which might happen if you were just impersonating somebody.
Ali Farnakian, I wonder if you've done a lot of workshops and you've worked professionally. I wonder if it's any easier or more difficult to work with younger folks who may have a less well-formed idea about, sort of what it means to be in comedy. Is it easier to work with somebody who's maybe not been exposed to so much comedy, or does that make much of a difference for you?
Well, I liken improv to golf. If you have a swing in you, whether you're 5 or 50, the swing is there. That's why when you see a young 5-year-old hit a golf ball and he has a swing in him. You're like, where did that come from? And improv's the same way. Whether you find it at a young age or an older age, it's something that immediately it resonates with you. It's like, oh, this is just playing make-believe. You're getting up on stage now and you're doing it in front of an audience in front of rarefied conditions. But if you listen and react and you don't interrupt, you say yes and until you have to say no, thank you, you make statements, not questions, and there's about 20 other, you know, solid rules, you're going to have better scenes and you're going to have more fun on stage.
Kristen, what's it been like for you? You said you kind of fell into this accidentally. Are you now really starting to study all of this and learn more about it? And what part will this play in your program? What part will improv play? Will it play a larger part?
Yes, because I have an acting background. So that's where my approach came from. And I got into it because my husband dragged me kicking and screaming to come audition for the troupe that he was doing, which looking back, I think it's ridiculous that I cried in my audition because I was terrified, because now I do this so frequently that I'm like, what was I so afraid of? But I think, you know, once you learn the rules of improv, of say yes and you know, just keep going. I feel like that's what's kind of been happening with this troupe, where it's just kind of spiraled into this huge thing. I thought I was being obscurely punked by being asked to be on NPR. I was like, who's calling? Like, what is this? This can't be real, because this came out of nowhere. But I mean, really, with saying yes and to improv and with the kids and just getting them going, I feel like this has opened up a huge door. And we are, this is a lot of, in Burnsville, this is the introduction of improv to a lot of folks up there. A lot of people didn't even know what it was. And so I feel like I've opened up a huge door, and I feel like this also helps them not only with being in a troupe and being able to play the games, but also with their performance, because they still do scripted theater and it makes them more confident. I've seen all of them grow personally, as well as, you know, not technically professionally, but, you know, on stage doing theater. I've seen a huge growth in these kids. It's been very impressive, and something that I didn't necessarily think of when I started this and thought about starting this.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Kristen Livingood, Levi Bradford, and Hannah Stella, the director and members of Burnsville-based teen improv group Get the Hook. They join me from Partner Station WCQS in Asheville. Kristen, Levi, Hannah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Also with us, veteran improv performer Ali Farinaki. And Ali, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
You can see Get the Hook perform in Carrboro this Saturday evening at 6:30. Ollie's going to be there at 7:30. You can attend one of his workshops, Ollie's workshops, Friday or Saturday. We've got all the details at our website, stateofthings.org. State of Things is from North Carolina Public Radio, which is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.